welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, just a heck of a turnaround for Baylor basketball. They went from opening up with three straight losses, and now they're, 9 out of 10, tied for first with Kansas and Texas.
Yeah, actually 10 out of 11 if you include the win over Arkansas in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. But yes, for conference purposes, yes, 9 out of 10. And the only loss was a five-point loss at Texas on a big Monday where they had a shot to tie in the closing seconds and it didn't go in. But, I mean, this team's playing really, really well. And, of course, you have Jonathan Chachua back, who, by the way, I said that right because he gave us all the pronunciation on that. But anyway, you know, with having him back in the lineup and the fact that he's playing serious minutes, I mean, the fact that he's getting 20 minutes per game and that's probably going to keep going up for him kind of tells you where Baylor really needs him in the block to be that post presence along with Flo Thamba. And the other thing it does is that it helps the guards get better looks, because when shots are going up, Baylor's got a good chance to get more offensive rebounds. This team was already a really good offensive rebounding team before John came back, but now that he is back, it really changes that. And then this team, you know, the one thing I said about them, Stephen, is when they got off to the 0-3 start, and remember, two of the losses to TCU and to Kansas State were by a total of 3 points. TCU hits a shot late in the closing seconds to win. And then Kansas State wins in overtime by a bucket. And so it wasn't like Baylor was like just treading water. They were completely collapsing or what have you. But they were still 0-3. And the only thing I kept saying at that time was all they've got to do is just try to get back to 500 and not worry about the conference title chase, but just get back to 500 and then climb over that wall. And then if you can start to see where you can start making your run for the conference championship, as long as you keep taking care of business, then you have a chance to really talk about it. Well, here we are entering arguably now the biggest game of the year as they go travel to Lawrence to take on Kansas in the rematch, where now they're tied with Kansas and Texas all at 9-4. And if Baylor wins this, not only would they at least have a share of first place, depending on what Texas does Saturday, but they would also have the tiebreaker over Kansas because they would have swept the series. So there's a lot of things at stake. And the way this team is playing now, they can be Final Four good if they become a little bit more consistent as shot makers and amp it up a little bit more on the defensive end.
Yeah, and when you mention Everyday John coming back, I think one of the other things that happens is he will take a three ever so often, but I still see him as being primarily an inside guy, primarily a rebounding guy, and he makes other teams collapse in, and I think it improves the three-point chances from the other side. Because like you look at that West Virginia game, they hit nearly 52% from three-point. That is unbelievable. And look at how they were moving the ball.
Yes. I mean, when this team moves the ball, they're as good as they are in the country. But to your point about, Everyday John taking threes, the one other benefit that provides, the fact that, you know, obviously Baylor doesn't want him to camp out there and keep hoisting them up, but the threat of him doing it draws the opponents big away from the basket, so that if he does put it up, that means that your chances of getting a rebound, should he miss, improve, because the inside presence had to go out toward the three-point line to guard him. So there is that aspect of it. And, you know, look at the way LJ Cryer has been playing too. I mean, LJ was just phenomenal Monday night against West Virginia. 8 out of 11 from three-point range. He was 7 of 8 to start. So I'm telling you, he's probably, you know, if you had to talk about all four of these guards, and I'm putting Langston Love in the discussion, so you put LJ Cryer, Adam Flagler, Keontae George, and Langston Love in that discussion, I really believe LJ Cryer is the best shooter on this team. They're all good shooters, but there's just a pureness in LJ, the way he can put it up, And when he gets hot, there's nobody better in the country. Because remember last year, you know, his darn foot injury and all that pretty much shut him down. And I think that that really hurt Baylor's season along with John's injury. But the fact that the fact that he is such a pure shooter just is such a great weapon to have. And I think, you know, with him being healthy, him having the resolve to want to bounce back from how last year ended for him earlier than normal, earlier than he wanted, and of course what Baylor wanted, it just changes the dynamic. And now it comes down to late in games, because you've got, you know, I've talked about Keyonte being, I want the ball in his hands at the end of the game, and I still believe that, and I would still want that. But here you are, you have, as far as I'm concerned, you have Keyonte at one, probably Adam Flagler 1A, and then you have LJ Cryer at 1B. That's how inseparable those three are. Then you put a guy like Love in there, you bring him off the bench, he can throw out a 7 of 9 for you from the floor, like he did recently. And so, you know, I think he did that at TCU, or maybe it was against Tech, but regardless, I mean, Oklahoma it was, rather. And that's a guy who can be kind of an X factor. So look, Baylor's backcourt, you know, you've heard a lot of the pundits in college basketball talk how Baylor has the best backcourt in the country. Probably do. And you were getting to the point of the season where your backcourts really need to start coming together, because they're going to drive the train to how far your season goes. And with Baylor being as healthy as it is, got a chance to make it really, really deep in March.
I think that it makes it really, because, you know, when you mentioned last year, they played a solid month with basically a 7-person rotation. And that wears on you because of the frequency of games. And you're only going to be up for so many games, and you're only going to win so many games with energy. You're going to have to win some of them because you're more talented, because you're not going to out-energy the other team.
Right. You just know how to run your offense really well, and you run it better than they can stop it, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and one other thing before we move on to another subject, have you noticed how much growth Keyonte George has had this year? I mean, he was always a really good shooter, but he's doing a lot of stuff away from the ball that he wasn't doing at the start of the season.
Sure, and he did not play. He did not have a very good offensive game against West Virginia. I think he was in single digits, like 7-9 points. But what he did was, he is a great passer. That's one thing that if you haven't watched him play that part of the floor, watch that part, because he can find people. And he led the team in assists on Monday night against the Mountaineers. I think it was with 7. He also had 9 rebounds. He also had 4 assists. So he's got he had 4 steals, rather. But he's got a lot of elements to his game that's more than scoring. So that's why he's such a threat and so many others. Now, the one thing that Keyonte doesn't do well is sometimes he will get careless with the basketball and turn it over unnecessarily. And that's what causes some issues there. But, you know, the fact that, you know, we're also getting to the point where the Bears – where I think Drew's going to really tighten that rotation. I think you're going to see maybe just 3 guys coming off the bench and playing time for guys like Ajuana, who we've already seen. And of course with Lomer, those minutes are going down, and you're seeing John and Langston Love being your 2 primary guys off the bench, with the other minutes being dispersed amongst other guys. But, you know, this game at Kansas, here's the other thing too. You know, because Baylor caught Kansas right in the middle of Kansas's 3-game losing streak. And now the Jayhawks, and in fact, the Jayhawks were in that swing where they went to Waco and then they went to Kentucky to play the Wildcats in a rough arena. And Kentucky's not that great this year, but you still got to beat them on the road and above, you know, all that stuff. And they did. And they've gotten hot since then. They just pulled off a really solid win against a very hot Oklahoma State team in Stillwater on Tuesday. So I think, you know, and with College Game Day being there on Saturday, and the excitement, the building of this game, even though it's not going to determine who will win the Big 12, because you still got, what, four more games after that one to find out who your conference champion is, or champions, plural. But it's going to be a great atmosphere. You know, Baylor finally won at Lawrence a couple of years ago, and I think it's just going to be a wonderful game. And I really would like to see what the Bears do against, you know, we already know what Wilson can do for Kansas. He's a tremendous player. Grady Dick is an outstanding shooter. But I want to see what Baylor does against K.J. Adams, Kansas's post, who shoots a high percentage, and he's really been playing well since that Baylor game. He actually played fairly well against the Bears in the game in Waco, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I expect this to be pretty tight. I have no idea how it's going to go, but I expect it to be very tight.
Yeah, and they got, you know, with the next three games are Kansas, Kansas State, and Texas. You know, of course, they've got the other two co-leaders that they've got, but and then you've got Kansas State. And the thing about Kansas State, they started out really hot, and, you know, they know each other. You know, these teams know each other, particularly from coaching staff. But these three games are going to be absolutely critical, and I'm still going to stand by that. I think Baylor, if they can close out strong, I think they can still be a number one seed.
Well, I think so, too. And it's going to depend. And to be honest with you, you know, even though they have six losses, they're 20-6 right now. But I think if they lose only one more time, and that should, I think that'll be enough for them to at least share the Big 12 championship. I think your Big 12 champion is probably going to be 13-5 this year. And whether or not the Bears do that by themselves or they share it with somebody, I don't know, but you're right. You know, this stretch is going to determine that. And if they get through it in pretty good shape, then yes, of course, they have a shot to be a number one seed.
All right. If we move on, Brock Jackson, outside linebacker, 6'4", 240, four-star, committed to Baylor. And he doesn't have like a super impressive offer list so far, but, you know, like you said, once somebody commits, that's when the recruiting really starts. But, you know, he has had offers from Arkansas. Apparently Deion Sanders thought something of him because Colorado's made an offer. Tech has offered. Oklahoma and Texas have been kicking the tires, but they haven't offered yet. But this is a really good get for Baylor as of this time.
Yeah, he's an edge guy, so he could probably play that, you know, that outside linebacker, you know, the jack position, basically, that Matt Jones was playing quite a bit last year. But he could be that, you know, that edge defensive end, that outside linebacker, depending on how Baylor wants to line up against either the opponent or the down and distance. And, you know, Brock was a guy that – he had always been kind of high on Baylor to an extent, but I think what happened was is that when he went to the junior day on January 29th, that really kind of sold him on what the values of this program are and how he can be a contributor to it. Now, he's still a year from June away from arriving because he's already told me that he's not going to arrive until June of next year. He doesn't want to graduate early, which is fine. For a guy like that, he probably, you know, he's going to redshirt anyway, probably his first year. But with 6'4", and if you can move laterally, you know, remember on that jack, you're going to have to be able to backpedal, drop back into pass coverage if they need you to do that. So with him having that kind of skill set, he can hone that in that first year while he's redshirting, and I think that'll be a big benefit. So now Baylor's up to three commitments, of course, with Colton Siraki, the offensive lineman from the Woodlands, on board, and the fact that, you know, it's slowly building. February is usually that quiet time of the month, or it's a dead period, of course, because nobody can go out and do anything, and then obviously it'll start to pick back up after spring break, because that takes us to the start of spring football. We finally have a date for when it's going to get going.
Yeah, and that is March 21st, that spring football starting.
That is correct. And then the spring game, the green and gold game, will be on April 22nd at McLean. So 15 practices. And what I like about it's a little bit late of a start because Baylor got started fairly early last year. But when they started, then they, as it turned out, they took a pause for spring break and then they came back and finished. I wasn't really a big fan of that because it's like when you're getting the spring ball, you need to kind of keep things in a rhythm and a schedule, that sort of thing. And that schedule got broken up. And the fact that they're going to wait until after spring break to get it started and then, you know, take it all the way through, I think that's a really good idea. And I think that's important, too, because remember, they have, what is it, 18 new faces that arrived at mid-semester. You have all 8 mid-semester transfers from the portal. You have about 10 guys from the 2023 class that are there. So when you're mixing all these new faces together, you've got to build some continuity. And I think that's what led to part of this rationale for starting after spring break.
Yeah, and this is something that is not just Baylor, but for everybody. With the transfer portal becoming so much more active now, it's like every year is a new one. I know that, you know, when I look back and we're doing a broadcast and I'm looking for photos to use, if I go back and look at football, it's getting to where it is very difficult to find people who were active last year.
You have a bunch of obsolete photos.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, it's not just Baylor, it's everybody. You know, it's like everybody's changing chairs.
Yes, it's the new world of college football where the rosters change and everything else changes. And keep in mind, I think all these schools still want to be true to how they build their teams. They're just doing it differently. They all want to try and build through their high school recruitment and their state. So Baylor obviously wants to maintain their strong ties in Texas, get a majority of the kids from this state because they're right in the middle of the state and they need to keep doing that. But if you look at a lot of the guys that they brought in, a good number of them are for 2 years, and they're kind of serving as a bridge. It's kind of a stopgap, but that's how you build it. It's basically, as we've said before, it's college football free agency. And, of course, the NIL figures into this. And we saw that, of course, with Keetron Jackson, the Arkansas wide receiver, where it really much kind of, as I put on the site on Keetron's profile the other day, there was kind of a battle, an NIL battle between Baylor and SMU, because after he committed to Baylor, SMU came back at him. And Baylor kind of had to up its commitment to him on the NIL side. Of course, now he has to live up to his end because he was such in demand. But that's, again, that's the new world we live in.
Now, do you think this is going to lead to, and again, this is more of a general question as opposed to just Baylor, but is this going to lead to more of a situation where coaches are going to have to go to a little bit more generic offense? Because, you know, like you looked at Matt Rhule, and he would bring those guys in, and he would groom them at that linebacker position for 3 years to get their last two. And I don't know if you have that luxury anymore.
Well, I think the way football has become a 365 sport with all of the 7-on-7 stuff, and it doesn't really matter if it's at the high school or the college level, where guys are always working out, going through reps. I mean, reps are basically going on every day, whether they're organized, not, you know, they're faux organized, you know, that sort of thing. It's always going to be guys that, you know, this is such a copycat sport anyway, in terms of offensive and defensive systems. But I think the way you look at the portal is that the way coaches will identify guys is, does he have the skill set that automatically matches our system? It's not like bring him in and then show him, you know, the way we do things here. It's a way of, does he have the skill set, what we need immediately? And I think that's what they need. You know, in Keetron Jackson's case, there were two things there. They needed an alpha receiver, which he still has to earn to do that, but they need a guy who can absolutely make plays. And so, and because the whole receiver corps for Baylor last year, let's face it, was pretty much a disappointment. And then the other thing is that you know, his ability, you know, his hands, the way he runs routes, the way that Baylor's route concepts are developed. Remember, Keetron's coming from a run-heavy type of situation at Arkansas, even though that's changed because Kendall Briles went to TCU. But you know what I'm saying? He went from an offense at Arkansas where they were primarily wanting to establish the run, and that's what Baylor wants to do. But Baylor needs to open it up in the passing game, and I think that's what hurt Baylor last year is that they couldn't do it because they didn't have a receiver that could make that play, that could stretch the field and cause all sorts of havoc in the opposing secondary. Keetron's got that chance to do that if he does what he's supposed to do in the offseason, spring ball, and then fall camp.
Okay. Now, one last thing. Somebody had mentioned, do you think that Chapin is going to be able to hang on to the job? Do you think there's going to be a real battle for that job?
Great question, isn't it? Other than that, when camp kicks off. But I think the way this looked with Sawyer Robertson is that, look, Blake Chapin is the incumbent. They've sold a lot of what they want to do with this program around Blake, but it's going to have to be up to Sawyer to not so much overachieve, but perform at such a high level during spring ball and the game, and more than likely in the fall camp, to have any chance of overtaking Blake. That's just how I see this. I don't think Blake loses this job unless he flat out, you know, continues in fall and spring camp what he did basically from Oklahoma State through the end of the season. And if he does that, of course we can't see it, but if he does that, then the whole quarterback situation becomes wide open. But until otherwise, I think it's his job, and Robertson's the capable backup.
Okay, and I'm still wondering, one of our posters had mentioned that Blake was never the same after that concussion. Do you think there may have been some lingering effects from that?
You know, I don't think that's wrong to think about that, because I really think that Blake was in a position where I don't think he should have played against Kansas, you know, hindsight being 2020. But if you think about the circumstances when he got hurt at West Virginia, and then Baylor had 9 days after West Virginia before the home game against Kansas where he started, and they said, oh, he looks great and he's doing all that and he's going to start and that sort of thing. But I don't know. I just kind of felt like maybe they rushed him back. Because, and I think there was some panic on there because they had just lost to West Virginia. They could see the Big 12 championship hopes slipping away because they had lost to Oklahoma State the week prior. And so I think there was some of that going on there saying, we've got to play him because we've got to stay in the race. But in the long-term effects, maybe they should have sat him and let Kyron start. And, of course, if Kyron starts, plays well, you know, that sort of thing. Maybe he's sticking around here and transfer portal quarterback situation here.
Okay. Hey, you want to close it out for us?
Okay, so we'll have coverage of Baylor at Kansas, 3:00 start Saturday afternoon at the famed Allen Fieldhouse. And, of course, we'll keep you updated on recruiting, that sort of thing. Baseball opens up on Friday, all afternoon games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday against the Fighting Chippewas of Central Michigan, one of my favorite nicknames, by the way, but against Central Michigan, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, then the Bears get their season underway. Of course, softball season is underway as well. They were in Las Vegas, and we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.